Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Thursday evenings at 7 Central, 6 Mountain, SDPB-TV brings you On Call with the Prairie Doc. Tonight's topic, suicide and depression. Let's talk. Dr. Rick Holm is the Prairie Doc, and he joins us now with a preview from the Janine Basinger Studio on the campus of South Dakota State University. Hey, Dr. Holm, welcome.
Hey, Lori. Thank you.
All right. This is an important show because it is important to talk about this. And let's start with just, you know, your career as a physician and caring for people over a lifetime. You've seen this play out in people's lives. It must be very difficult from a physician's point of view, as well as the deep personal costs that depression and suicide have on families.
You know, I worked the emergency room along with the hospital, along with outpatient care for most of my practicing life before they started relegating those jobs to ER doctors and hospitalists and so on and so forth. And many people would come in having had a suicide attempt, and you would bring them through it and they would survive, and then you would spend significant time with them. Oftentimes you would spend time getting them to the hospital, the psych hospital, that would do them some longer care type of support. But every once in a while there would be one that would come in dead. Those memories just don't go away in my brain. They're just so tragic, so sad, so awful, because you see the residual in the family. I had an EMT, for example. He was part of the ambulance team, you know, maybe 20 years ago, and he was getting a divorce, and he was a happy, talented, you know, smart, you know, good-looking young man, and sent his ex roses that would arrive the next morning, told all of his EMT people the next time they'll see him, they'd be putting him in a body bag. And then indeed, that's exactly what happened. And I found myself so angry. But, you know, the anger didn't help me and didn't help him and didn't help the family.
Just a human response. A doctor having a human response. That's probably okay, right?
Yeah.
And this is a human thing, because suicide has been with us, you know, throughout humanity. What are the numbers? What sort of statistics are we seeing now? Because those statistics are sobering.
It's growing. It's growing in the U.S. and it's growing in South Dakota. There's in one count 47,000 deaths due to suicide. One looks at the 72,000 deaths due to opioids, and some of those are suicides. You just can't know that.
Right.
There were 1.4 million attempts and 47,000 deaths due to suicide. So we know that many aren't successful. Success is not the right word. Mm-hmm. Do not kill the patient, but many do. More women try to commit suicide. More men kill themselves.
Die from suicide. Yeah.
Die from suicide.
What are the risk factors?
Well, you know, sometimes there are none. People who have depression, who have a situational depression, you know, the farm is failing, or their wife is divorcing them, or something bad is happening. That's a very temporary thing. Some people have depression. There's no reason for it, and we see that. And sometimes they'll cover up their depression so that the family doesn't know, doesn't even consider the fact that they might be considering it, and then they're gone, and people are surprised. I had a physician friend commit suicide, and the people in the clinic went bonkers the day before he died, thinking they could save him with this and that and this and that, and he just kind of tricked everybody and went off and shot himself. The risk factors are, you know, family history of depression or manic depression, a history of being abused or being an abuser. excessive alcohol, sleeping pills, substance abuse, a recent emotional loss, even a significant medical illness can put you at higher risk for this. And there are higher risks in local areas where epidemics of suicide in youth, especially on reservations, can occur. So most of it, though, is no reason, no, just out of the blue. And it's more of a off-the-cuff, didn't think about it before when you're younger. It's interesting, one of the highest risks for death is an elderly man who loses his wife, and he commits suicide, usually by a firearm. Twice as many firearm deaths from suicide as by, you know, others.
So how do we begin to approach a problem that is not only complex, but is increasing, it's growing, and then it can feel random, or it can feel as if people have done, you know, you've got a whole clinic full of doctors and healthcare professionals saying we can, you know, we're going to engage in this 100% and still not successful and, you know, in their minds disappointed with the result. You know, where do you begin in trying to address the problem to have any kind of hopefulness that these numbers can decline through effective treatment and efforts on our parts?
You know, one third of the people who are so depressed that they would consider suicide will go get help. Two thirds don't. But of the one third that do, 80% are better in a month. Treatment really does work. And there's a variety of treatments. Sometimes it's not medicinal. Medicinal and, you know, supportive therapy is important. Probably, you know, I've thought the most underutilized thing is being a friend. Just being there to listen. I think we need to encourage people to get help when you sense something is going down. Something's happening. Get them to somebody. Or if you're the one, get some help. Don't just put it off. Get some help. Get the firearms out of the house. Do all those. Look at the pills. Make sure that the dangerous pills are gone if it's a family member. So, you know, we can take all these precautions. Sometimes, no matter what you do, they'll find a way.
Right.
I think those of us who survive have to realize we cannot carry the burden of that death. You know, all you can do is be a good person, try to do the right thing, and go to bed at night with the feeling that you did the right thing. I mean, you tried, and none of us can are super girl or super boy or super
super healers.
Healers either.
We're not omnipotent and all powerful.
No, we're not.
But the 80% feeling better in a month of the people who do get treatment seems like an optimistic, you know, tidbit to share with somebody who is going through a rough patch, or to say help exists, and on the other side of that help is feeling better. Because that can be the thing that people get stuck in is the fact that this will never be bad. This is always going to be
always there.
This is going to be the
thing. I think if I should at least say that if you're, you know, if you're not suicidal and you want to get some help without doing medicinal things, probably the number one thing is a regular exercise program, walking a mile a day, huge help. Other things that can help is to have a friend to talk with whom to talk, and spend 15 minutes a day, maybe going to an elderly person who needs somebody. You be the giver. Giving helps all of us be better. So there's a lot of things out there we can consider.
Giving helps all of us be better. We'll just leave that for now. And tonight you can tune in to On Call with the Prairie Doc. That's at 7 Central, 6 Mountain. Dr. Holm, thank you so much for being here. We appreciate always hearing your voice.
Oh, you're very welcome, Lori. Thank you.